If there was a microphone you could dangle over the comments page at the Huffington Post, you would hear a stadium full of voices. Civil mostly, loud yes, and some nasty. 270,000 comments on the Huffington Post every day. Even those comments are selected by algorithms and human curators, but the Post announced this week that anonymous comments are no longer welcome. Arianna Huffington, president, founder, and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Media Group, says the site has attracted more than 260 million comments since it launched in 2005, and she wants her site to promote civil conversation. Anonymity, she says, gets in the way of that.
There were many trigger moments. There was my being in London and seeing what was happening with anonymity there, which had reached just incredible levels with death threats and rape threats. And I had a conversation with Brian Appleyard, who writes for the Sunday Times. And we had this conversation about anonymity and freedom of expression. And we all kind of defend anonymity on the grounds that it's freedom of expression. And Brian was very eloquent on the subject that, in fact, the two things are not at all identical, that freedom of expression, as he said today in a blog he wrote in the Times, requires a kind of moral agency. And if you're going to be anonymous and hide behind anonymity, you're really forfeiting your right, at least on our side. And while that was going on, at the Huffington Post itself, from the beginning, as you know, John, we put a tremendous premium on maintaining a civil conversation. All our comments from day one, when we had like 12 comments, were pre-moderated. And when our comments grew dramatically, we added the most advanced technology to moderate them, an algorithm that we keep educating and investing a lot in, plus 40 comment moderators. So we made a big investment in maintaining a civil environment. But as our comments kept growing, we've now had a total of over 260 million comments on the site. It became clear that in order to maintain the kind of civil environment for conversations that we want, we would need to end anonymity. We realized that ending anonymity does not mean ending negative commenting, but it does mean substantially reducing it.
Can't that same argument against anonymity apply to anonymous sources that journalists use all the time, that if you don't have your identity disclosed, you lose a sense of moral agency?
No, not at all, because anonymous sources are not anonymous to the journalists to whom they talk. Whistleblowers are not anonymous to the journalists to whom they talk. And so that's a completely different situation. And of course, we are very much in favor of anonymous sources, provided, again, that anonymity is justified. As you know, anonymous sources have been dramatically misused also, as they were in the lead up to the war in Iraq.
So how do you determine someone's identity to the satisfaction that, you know, people can hide behind all kinds of digital identities, and anonymity just changes its disguise?
Well, we are going to be using a Facebook login, which is a pretty good system where people have to basically identify themselves. Our current users are going to be grandfathered in and then be able to continue commenting as they are, unless they use ad hominem attacks or a comment that would not be allowed, in which case they would have to identify themselves through a Facebook login.
You know, there's something about the power of digital media and the numbers and scale of digital media that brings out the worst in some people. Do you think on some level, I don't know what you imagined when you got into this, that you have created a monster here on some level?
I think it's anonymity that brings out the worst in people. We see that again and again. As we've moved from the adolescent stage of the internet to its more mature stage, where I believe we are in now, and we need to get deeper and deeper into it, we are actually going to make a lot of decisions like that. I mean, curation, ending anonymity, all these things are just ways basically to reduce the level of noise.
But is it possible that a comment from someone who's, say, In a situation that is politically sensitive in Iran, who wants to get a message out about something going on in Iran or in Aleppo in Syria, is going to suddenly be blocked on the Huffington Post because of this?
Oh, we have so many ways for people like that to reach us, you know, emails to our reporters. There are so many ways, direct tweets. If you go on the Huffington Post and want to reach one of the reporters or to comment anonymously about something going on, you're going to find the endless array of ways to reach us. And of course, commenting is not the only way our readers engage with our content. You know, they share, they tweet, they post to LinkedIn, they post to Google Plus, they email their friends. And these are all actions they take publicly, you know, in full view of the internet public, with their full identity.
So, Arianna Huffington, I'm fascinated that on your first day, did you really have 12 comments, as you just mentioned before? That's actually a huge amount for a first day.
Well, what I do remember, John, is that I had to get my daughters to agree to be paid like some below minimum wage to pre-moderate comments in the early 80s of the Huffington Post, because there are only five of us, and we certainly didn't have time to pre-moderate comments. And again, from the beginning, that was so important, especially, you remember, as we were trying to elevate blogging and to invite people who would never have dreamt of blogging before to blog, we had a real responsibility to make sure they were not being attacked for no reason.
Well, it sounds like even from the very beginning, you had enough comments to have plenty of work.
At least for my two middle school daughters.
Arianna Huffington, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Arianna Huffington is president and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Group. Back to our conversation about the best criteria for picking colleges and some practical advice from Amanda.
The first thing that I thought of when going to the college that I wanted to go to was, did it give me the ability to get the degree that I was looking for? And I think that's going to be the most important. I mean, especially if you know what you want to do.
Know what you want to do. Tell us your story about the criteria for a good college. 8778-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.